Hello, and welcome to JAPA Talks, your go-to podcast for everything about smart parking solutions and the transformation of urban mobility, here to guide you through the latest in technology and innovation in our cities. Whether you're involved in city planning, an enthusiast of urban development, or just curious about future trends, you'll find our discussions enlightening. In today's episode, we are thrilled to have two distinguished guests from UC Davis. Joining us are Perry Eggleston, the parking director at UC Davis, and Ramon Zavala, transportation demand manager. They're here to share their insights on pioneering parking and transportation strategies that enhance campus life and improve urban flow.
So just to let everyone know, these two are working with UC Davis. Perry is the parking director at UC Davis, and Ramon is the transportation demand manager at UC Davis. Probably the top dogs in both of their positions there. And it's really nice because they've been a client with ours since the beginning. For people that don't know the JAPA background, I started this company as a classroom project at UC Davis. So my alma mater, it's great to have you guys here. Perry, we're going to start off the questions with you. And actually, Ramon, you're going to have a similar question, but able to answer that one next. Perry, can you describe your day-to-day responsibilities as UC Davis's parking director? I know you started pretty recently and you had some big shoes to fill, but after you came into the role, you've won a ton of awards. So what are you doing differently and what are your day-to-day?
Well, my day-to-day job is just mostly keeping our direction going for the future and forecasting what the demands will be for the university. And then going from there. And so I try to keep my head above the day-to-day weeds and operations. And I have two directors who handle that for me. And I trust them to handle the day-to-day issues so that I can again focus on future goals for the department and the future. And again, forecasting what the future is. Mostly, you know, I started in 2020, but I've been in the industry 30 years. I've worked at several campuses across the country and as a consultant in the university field of parking and transportation. So I have quite a bit of background in it. And so that's pretty much what I do. I just make sure our team is working together and our team is going in the right direction. And then I also do a lot of interceding politically on the between the executives groups and the other stakeholder groups that interact with our department. And I work with those groups in the stakeholder discussion, stakeholder updates, things like that.
Sounds like you have the funnest job in the world. No, I mean, I've known the parking director before you and that's when I was a student. And just to see what you've done to the campus and based on all of your experience, I mean, when I first met you, Perry, I learned about your experience being a consultant when you came from, you know, outside of California. And it's just really nice and refreshing to see what you've done with the campus, how it's being awarded all these awards because of what you've done. So really, really great to see, Perry. Awesome part of UC Davis.
The best part of you being at UC Davis is the campus allows me to do what I see. They hired me on the pretext of we need somebody to come in and present or operate in a out of the box paradigm inverting solution. And I just jumped at that chance.
Well, that means they trust in you.
Yes.
To build on top of that, Perry, when you were offered that opportunity, were you nervous? Were you like, hey, this is a huge opportunity, something that I'm not used to because I came from the consulting world, you know, but I've been in the parking transportation.
I've been a director before and I saw this as an opportunity. To go back, most directors work extensively with universities trying to get things to change. They see issues and then they spend a lot of their time working to get the university to support the changes that this director would want. And I had that experience at other campuses. What was interesting about this campus is that was inverted. I came during my interview, they've already brought a consultant in earlier than me who did an analysis and they just handed me this document called Transportation Tomorrow and stated, we want you to operationalize this. And I looked at it and that's what I've been doing for 4 years as a consultant. And so, I mean, who can pass that up where you already have the executive groups and all the stakeholder groups supporting what you're doing? I didn't have to come in and try and convince them to change. No, they told me to come in and change it. And that is something that is unique, I think. Not all directors get that. A lot of times they get called, you know, we don't want you guys to, you know, we don't want parking to be a problem. You just keep things quiet and normal and you know, put your 30 years in and go home. And here it was, no, we want you to come and make a splash.
Yeah, be the innovator for our campus rather than just the moderator. I love it. Ramon, for you now, we're going to have two kind of questions. One, describe your day-to-day tasks. You know, being a transportation demand manager, a lot of people might not know what that means, you know, especially for people that are outside the parking industry. You know, they probably don't like the parking departments. You know, this is the time to really show them, hey, we're not the bad people. We're actually helping you out a lot.
Yeah. Sure. So generally speaking, my job is to reduce the detrimental environmental effects of the campus commute. And that means convincing people from one part of it to switch away from driving alone to carpooling, transit, biking, walking, and nowadays remote work and remote learning, if that is an option for them. And if you do have to drive, it's my goal to help get you to, when next you purchase a vehicle, to choose something more fuel efficient or even go towards a zero emission vehicle. Those are the goals. How we do those day to day, how I do those, how me and my team does it, differs per the exact necessity. So we have different strategies to attain those goals and are typically less straightforward than other campuses get to implement. Mainly because all the low-hanging fruit at UC Davis when it comes to sustainable commuting has been plucked years ago. We're a bike campus. It was in the 1960s that our second chancellor, Emil Marak, said, I want to see a bicycle-riding, tree-lined campus, and his architects built out for that. In the 60s as well, ASUCD, the Associated Students UCD, established Unitrans by buying a couple London double-deckers and bringing them over to the U.S. They started their own transit system, which then the city of Davis adopted as their official transit system. So we have transit and biking locked in, but we still have a huge amount of vehicle traffic throughout the area because it is so expensive to live in Davis.
Wow. Hold on real quick. I want to go back because I was a student at Davis for a long time. Well, I mean, not too long, but I just learned so much information about that. I mean, I knew about buses coming in, and Mariana, you're not familiar with Davis, but we have these beautiful double-decker buses transporting students, you know, from their housing to all over campus and
in the city.
And I used to work with ASUCD as well. I didn't know they were the ones to start this whole movement. And then just to know that the chancellor, what was her name again?
Emil Marak.
It wasn't Katehi, right?
No, I'm just kidding. No, it was not.
yeah, Perry, I don't think you were there for Katehi. I didn't know that's how the campus became a biking campus. And now that's the number one biking campus, I think, in the U.S., right?
Absolutely.
But Matt, I have a question. When you were a student at UCD, were you like staying in campus or you were a commuter?
I was staying on campus. I would take those large double-decker buses. I was on the V line going from those new apartments. I forget what it's called over there. And then I would ride my bike all the time too, but I got 3 bikes stolen. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to skateboard from here on out. Yeah, because I can carry that with me. So yeah, awesome, Ramon. I had no idea. You were there before Perry, right?
Yeah, I joined UC Davis in 2017. I came from UC Irvine doing my job there since 2010. So it was 7 years at UC Irvine, and I've been here since 2017.
Wow. Yeah. So you've seen the transformation from before Perry and then what Perry did after. Can you talk a little bit about what Perry has done based on your own point of view?
Well, one of my favorite things in describing Perry, I don't know if I've ever told Perry this, is that one of Perry's greatest qualities is that he moves forward. So when he says that he was handed the transportation planning document that I helped develop with the consultants at the time, he was like, okay. And as much as people will point to Perry as the parking director, the dude's TDM at heart. And as just as much as I am TDM focused, I work within parking management theory as well, but we have to focus in different areas. So when he saw daily parking, he saw the need to reduce the number of vehicles coming to campus, saw the issue of us actually having to do stack parking because we had all these different issues of encouraging vehicle use to come to campus while having the mandate to reduce vehicle use. He attacked it. He moved forward. He saw, here's the steps, how we go forward. And that was absolutely necessary to bring about all of the changes that we've done that has made such a great difference on reducing vehicle demand on campus, reducing vehicles in general here at UC Davis, and making it a lot easier to bike and even take the bus around campus.
Yeah. Perry, you don't have to blush right now. We're not going to.
So you also saw the transformation before COVID and after COVID, right? Because you were you started in 2017.
Oh, and that's a good point, Mariana. Perry, you came in at a very difficult time. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I started 3 months before COVID hit.
You want to
talk? Was a problem and a blessing in disguise in allowing us to make the changes so quickly.
Was it because the campus was empty during that
correct
time?
Yeah. It was fairly easy when there was nobody around to make changes, because then everybody came back to what the new reality is, and then they just went from there.
So it was kind of like a good reset. Hey, you know what? Let's take all these old policies out. This is our opportunity to do it. Wow, what a come up on for you. So Perry, building on top of that, you started 3 months after the pandemic started. You said blessing in disguise, but also there's a lot of challenges at hand. If you can name or talk about the biggest challenge that you had coming into UC Davis, what would that be?
It's balancing demand versus pricing versus building new facilities versus increased change in the dynamics of micro mobility, all those items, trying to balance the three out. And our goal to come in is not to build a garage because we can't afford it. The rates that we charge are probably what, Ramon, they're in the center, lower half.
Yeah, within the UC system, we are either the second lowest price per day or third, depending on the rate or in the grouping, et cetera. So we're, of course, every campus thinks that they have the highest parking they've ever seen. We are very low in cost for parking.
I just parked at a time zone the other day, and it was like very cheap just to park there. And I was like, wow, this is awesome. No. So no, I believe you on that. Except I park in a student parking and I paid $16, but.
Well, again, so we're trying to balance that because there's different levels of students and the job market is difficult. And if we raise parking fees too high, people may consider working other places. Students may consider going to other schools. So it's a balance. And so the challenge has been is as we've gone to this daily choice model is we went from experiment to normalization. It's a normal thing now. Now we are seeking ways to validate its efficacy. And so we're seeking partners to do that. And that's our next big step is okay, daily choice. How will we operate in the future? Because nobody else has done this. So we don't have anybody to follow. We don't have any research on it. And yeah. So we're trying to validate how effective our program is.
Yeah, I think that's what I was going to ask. Like, how are you getting these ideas? Are you following somebody? Are you going off of like, hey, Europe did this at their university. It's like, let's try it here. Is this all just from your head, Perry? You're like,
Yeah, I have a chair I sit in and I rub my pug's head. It's a bald pug now. And then I throw about a bunch of ideas towards my senior leadership team. About 10% of them stick, the rest of them they ignore, and I tend to move on. But no, a lot of my ideas come from the experiences I've had with my peers across the United States. Mm-hmm. And as a consultant, I engaged with hundreds and hundreds of different types of professionals in this field. And each one has slightly different ideas. And I was just able to take those ideas, mesh them together, and kind of come up with a new idea and move forward with it.
I mean, the way I look at that is kind of like how I run a business, right? you have new ideas, it won't work until you put execution to it. And Perry, based on what Ramon says, you all, you're just about execution. Any idea you have in your head, yeah, let's try it out. If it doesn't work, let's move on to the next one. Until we can get this campus exactly running efficient, no congestion from traffic and everything. So, I mean, I couldn't be more proud to be a UC Davis alma mater and have Perry and Ramon leading it. That gets me to my next question for you, Ramon. With all these strategies in place, what was your biggest strategy that you placed to make traffic management and reduce traffic?
Yeah, traffic congestion on campus is an issue, but it's not an issue because there's insufficient roads or there's bad traffic signaling or something like that. Most of the time, it's people just trying to get to parking, their parking spot that they think they want to go to. And when I started in 2017 here, I noticed that most people didn't know where the parking facilities actually were. Everyone knows where the quad parking structure is on the north side of campus. Lots of people know where the pavilion parking structure is on the south side of campus. I'd say maybe at that time, 15-20% of students knew that there was yet another parking structure on the south side of campus. And it's actually really easy to get to directly from the freeway. So when in fall 2021, we were reopening the campus, right? It's the first big restart post lockdown and stuff. And we knew that we were going to have a Carmageddon situation. That's the term we use when we know we're going to have too many vehicles, often with not enough understanding of where to park, where to drive, et cetera. And we began our now traditional Carmageddon messaging. And this is how it works. So fall 2021, we started getting our compliance group and a number of other of our student employees out in the parking facilities. And as they're making their rounds, just quickly message back through one means or another. We were doing text message at the time. Message back what the lot fill status is at all of our biggest parking facilities, our most popular ones. And then we would take all that information, we push it out through Reddit, through at the time Twitter, through Slack, everywhere possible. And we're showing lot fill areas. And we're saying it's now 85%. We're going to call this full because we know that last 15% of fullness is already on the road and they're not checking. So if you were going to park here instead, go over there. We were doing what a lot of people want in automated parking direction manually. Yeah. And we got a whole lot of really good reviews. So we did it again in the winter quarter. Didn't do it so much in the spring quarter because that by that time, people understood where to go. And then we remembered, well, that's we've only done that 1 year. So 2022 comes around, we do it again. 2023 comes around, fall 2023, we go to implement as normal. And we notice that the gateway parking structure is actually filling in the morning at the same rate as pavilion and just a bit after quad. Because after 2 years of this training, people actually learned where all the parking facilities were. And to the best of my understanding, that had never been done on this campus. It was such a huge reduction in congestion and lost people that we had multiple comments come in from our colleagues from throughout the campus saying, are there fewer vehicles on campus this first week of fall? It was so easy to ride around. And we were glowing with absolute pride, because we figured out that we had trained the population over multiple years to know where to park, where it's easiest, not convenient. Because if you park where it's easy, you end up parking quickly and you can walk or scooter or bike or skate to your destination quicker than going around the completely full facilities looking for that one empty stall. Absolute huge success. And we're going to continue doing it every year.
Wow. I mean, in the entrepreneur world, we call that the MVP, right? You didn't need to code anything. You got your minimum viable product out just by doing manual counts. And what innovation to see, because you're able to change the habits of your commuters within 2 years. And now look at the, wow.
Yeah, Perry, that's the name of my game, behavior modification.
I talk to you guys all the time and I'm getting chills hearing these stories. Like, wow, you guys are really killing it. Actually, like these are
awesome. Something we're doing now is we're automating. We're partnering with a company that's going to automate that front-facing map and notification software system and provide that one point of contact to direct them to spaces and then allow them to go from payment from that app to the proper app for payment.
Awesome. I mean, talk about a better commuter experience. Your students are going to love it. I mean, I remember when I was a student and they were saying, I was talking with the old parking director, Clifford Contreras, I believe his name is, and he was just saying, we need a better experience for our commuters. This is the first thing that they do is when they get to campus is complain about parking. And we want it to be a highlight for our campus. Like, hey, come to UC Davis because we have an amazing parking system. Forget about, you know, our rock climbing wall. We have an amazing parking system and you guys are achieving it. That's awesome. Perry or Ramon, is there any topics that you do want to speak about?
Oh God, I could speak for hours on every single part of transportation. You don't want to get me started.
Well, if you were to choose like one thing that, hey, I want to talk about it because we're either doing it so well.
It's actually one of the things that UC Davis does that is relatively unique is we facilitate a huge variety of different types of transportation all in the same space. So we have campus transit, which is also the city transit. We have intra-city transit, all using the same bus terminals. Bikes, scooters, skateboards in high volumes as the dominant form of transportation within the busiest part of the campus. On the roads, along with campus vehicles, huge numbers of pedestrians, etc. Most people, when they first see UC Davis at noon on a Tuesday, they say, oh my God, it's like controlled chaos. But what they find out is that it looks chaotic because you don't understand the system. We have, 30-something roundabouts, which most people are scared to jump into when they first start. And then afterwards, they think this is the most efficient thing. Why don't we have these everywhere? City of Davis has a number of roundabouts. A lot of cities, in fact, in the U.S. have roundabouts, but it causes concern and fear. We have huge bike parking lots and almost a 2-to-1 bike parking spot ratio to vehicle parking spot ratio. And one thing I want to say is that most of these things can and should be managed similarly. So you have bike, scooter, skateboards, electrified versions of all of them. While there is different state law governing how they're allowed to be used, they should be all moving the same direction. They should all be on the right side of the road and off of sidewalks, et cetera. Buses of all types, they can use the same bus terminals so long as there's a full understanding of where they may park. And that's one of the ways that we ease the process of managing this huge transportation system is we see the similarities of different types of transportation and get them grouped and behaving in the same way.
I like it. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely apparent that you guys are doing that. I mean, with all the bikes, I mean, even with electric scooters becoming a very prevalent in all universities, it's very hard to get those mandates right. And, you know, so I think you guys are doing that perfectly. And yeah, Perry, how about you? What is one thing that you want to say to the world? Maybe you could brag about yourself. You could talk about, look at my new jacket. It's awesome. You know, or, hey, I'm the best parking director in the world. And these are the reasons why.
No, if I had the best team, nothing without my team. And like I said earlier, I may come up with the ideas and they tell me many of them aren't nice. They're not applicable, but then the ones I do hit, they take those and they run with it because without the team, I couldn't have done anything. So I just want to brag on the team for doing what they've accomplished. We continue to, again, normalize paradigm inversion management. And so we're trying to just keep that going, trying to solidify it, trying to validate it. And I still need my team to do that.
Awesome.
Nice. I love that answer.
Okay, for both of you, last question. Or I have one more question after this, but this one for both of you. How do you see the future of parking for UCD in the next 5 years?
Go ahead, take that one first, Perry.
I see the continued increase in micromobility devices outside of bicycles, more of these scooters type of other things. And so I see that, seeing that changing the last mile landscape on campus. I see bicycles going away because the costs of a scooter are not going away, but reducing. The cost of scooters is so affordable now. So what we have to do is we have to prepare for that. We have to look at a landscape that includes these scooters, and therefore we have to address some of the storage issues, some of the powering issues, but some of the safety issues. And I'm sure people 20, 30 years ago, when they first started getting a proliferation of bicycles, had the same issues then. And it just took, over time we adjusted to them. So that's something I see happening. I see a responsibility for the university to be, as the state transitions to electric vehicles, to be a resource for the community, at least initially, to provide power sources for our folks in our community besides our internal community. That being that it's very expensive to put a charger in. You just can't drop it and plug it in. You've got so much infrastructure you've got to put in. Many of the apartment complexes, even new houses or older houses, things like that, getting that all post installed, it will take time and money, and who knows where the electric vehicle face is going. We've talked with vendors who are saying, no, we've got battery packs. So it'd be like going to the corner battery store and just pulling your battery out, dropping another battery in and getting another 600 miles out of it. The question would be is then why did put millions of dollars into plugging in when it's going to be a battery swap? Hydrogen. I mean, there's so many different things that are happening that you just got to prepare for all of it, and you just got to really watch the landscape. That's what my job is to watch the landscape. Ramon helps quite a bit, but again, somebody's going to have to make a decision. And so we're looking at ways of upgrading and replacing our electric vehicle charging stations. But how far do we want, do we want to add another 1,000 ports? Well, maybe not, because we don't know where it's going. And, we don't want to be the ones looking, look at those ports over there. They're folly. They spent millions of dollars on all those ports. Now they're sitting empty because there's battery swapping, or we went hydrogen or something like that. So we don't want to be the folly, but we also want to be the vanguard. And there's only a fine line between the two.
Yeah, that's difficult. I mean, technology moves so quick that it's hard to be. I mean, you have to be resilient. If something doesn't work, just pick back up and then keep moving. Ramon, how about you? Where do you see it?
Actually, I'm going to pick up where Perry left off there, because EVs, despite all the changes in e-bikes and e-scooters and all these other things, that's all relatively conceptually settled and handled. There's very few things to adjust for there, conceptually speaking. The hard part is actually facilitating EVs, as Perry mentioned, not just for the people who are going to be commuting to campus and who need to recharge, but also serving as a resource to our local community who, because they're living in rentals, will not likely have easy access to long duration charge, even at level two. And there's, precious few level three or DC fast chargers, just nationally speaking. My thing I want to say here is the importance of running that as a, at least as a financially separate enterprise. There's 21% of our level two EV chargers in the US that are non-operational, because so many places who bought or installed EV chargers did so as an amenity. They weren't being run revenue neutral, and thus there was no backfill for maintenance, replacement, warranty, all of that. That is incredibly important if you want the stability of EV charging. So that's what I'm looking forward to. We have dumb chargers on this campus right now. Our transition is going to be to go to smart chargers and charge, and this is the controversial part, a revenue neutral cost per kilowatt hours. That way we can ensure that the chargers stay in good maintenance and maybe even expand in the future. And that's weird, because if the price is so low that you get a whole lot of utilization, especially as EVs are still relatively nascent, you have to ask, is that utilization appropriate? Yeah. Because if it's from someone who's making $250,000 and they're able to survive on getting vehicles based on tax credits and stuff, that's not exactly your real demand. They're coming to your place to charge because it's cheaper than them charging at home, in a garage, in a home that they own. When you get the cost per kilowatt hour appropriate for replacement, for maintenance and everything, you will probably see utilization of those stations change. And only after that point will we be able to see how quickly and to what extent we have to expand charging on campus.
Yeah.
It has to be done in a fiscally sustainable way. I'm all about the ecological sustainability of operations, but fiscal sustainability is just as important. Otherwise, all of your efforts start going down the drain and you just need to get more people on campus to park.
Yeah, make it make sense on all ends, pretty much.
Absolutely.
Well, that is all news to me. As an EV driver myself, yeah, it is hard and it sucks. Charging sucks and it costs a lot of money. And I can see where on your end, yeah, you guys have to think about the right vendor to work with, the cost that they charge you, you know, even the just the construction to put it in. It's insane. So I'm glad I don't have to worry about that. But we are working with a lot of EV charging stations. So hopefully in the near future, you guys will work with some of our innovations. Perry, Ramon, we'd like to end this by asking you, is there anything you need from us or from the public? Is there any words say, hey, we need help by doing this? This is your time. Yeah, like pretty much like a good minute to talk anything. You know, what do you need help with?
I'll go first.
Yeah, Perry's you go first, Ramon, because I'm not sure how I want to answer that.
All right, I'll ask the thing I want from either general public or from you at JAPA is that when you have a question, ask the question. I always advise people before making a demand or making a judgment on something, ask people why. So if the public wants to know why we have to charge for parking, we're really happy to tell people. Why do you do things this way? Happy to tell you. We are part of an educational institution and firm believers in both the research methodology and just simply being open about the reasons for all of our methodologies. Ask us why. We will tell you and tell you and tell you. We love sharing information.
Yeah, transparency is key. That's one of our four pillars that we stand on in JAPA is transparency. I mean, no one likes a fake person, so why fake the funk when you can just be truthful about it?
Go. Absolutely.
Man, I agree with Ramon that we have a person whose job is to get outreach for us, Shelby, and that's her gig. And that makes her job is easier when Ramon and I and my other leadership are ready to meet with folks and talk about ideas. And we've met with student groups, we've met with faculty staff groups, and we've listened to their concerns. And sometimes we've even brought in those concerns and addressed them as best we could. And other times we've explained why we operate in the certain manner we do. Of course, not everybody's the happiest when they've got to, you know, they pay for parking where 99% of it, wherever else they drive, it's free, but they don't realize that they're actually paying for it in some way. But, you know, the University of California, the California State University system, and many of the junior colleges have all agreed that parking should be something that is paid for by the users and not just absorbed by tuition. The money that's being paid for by the users, that money is now freed to be utilized for improving coursework and buildings and things like that.
Well, I think that's great. We'll definitely get this message out because I know even as a student, the parking department had a bad rap. And now that where I'm in the parking industry, you guys shouldn't, because you're there to help everybody. You're trying to make their lives better. So, no, I appreciate it.
And that wraps up another episode of JAPA Talks. And thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's conversation and want to learn more, don't forget to visit our website at www.parkjapa.com and follow us on our social media at ParkJAPA via X, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook. Subscribe to JAPA Talks on your favorite podcast platform to never miss an episode. You've been listening to JAPA Talks. Join us next time as we continue to explore the innovations driving the future of parking and transportation. Until then, keep moving forward.